I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Orlando Bowen. Orlando's mission is to inspire people to be game changers in the lives of others. Orlando is a former professional athlete, a television personality, and he has been motivating youth and corporate audiences for years through keynotes and through his role of founder and executive director of One Voice, One Team Youth Leadership Organization. Orlando, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you on today.
David, it's an absolute pleasure. I'm really excited and very grateful as well.
So you have a remarkable story that is a very inspiring one, and I wondered if we could start off by you talking a little bit about your background and how you got to the point where you're doing what you're doing now.
Awesome. Thank you for that, David. So I came to North America, to the greater Toronto area in particular, as an immigrant. And, you know, growing up, we always had this saying around our house, be satisfied with what you get. That meant if we went over to a friend's place for dinner or a family member's home for dinner, and all they put on the table was half of a hot dog, we should always just say thank you and not ask for any more, because the reality was that that might be the only thing that they have to offer. And so I grew up with this mindset of, you know, not having, but also working to be able to achieve things that were important. So I ended up getting a football scholarship to go to Northern Illinois University, and, you know, earned a couple of degrees, did a bachelor's in marketing, master's in IT. And just knowing that education was going to be the great equalizer and was going to be able to provide me the thing that would make me happy, money. And I remember signing a contract with a consulting firm in Chicago, and having the opportunity to, you know, be making some really good money and thinking that, you know, that was going to be the thing. And it really wasn't. Even as fulfilling as it was from a financial perspective, I still felt like there was more that I could do to give back and to make a difference. That was really crystallized when I went back to Jamaica, the place of my birth, and had an opportunity to be walking back from a dinner party to my very posh hotel, and a little boy comes up to me. He had jeans that were cut into shorts and an undershirt, and he says, could you spare a couple dollars so I could get a piece of bread? And David, I had to tell you, looking at that young man, I thought, man, what have I really accomplished? Like, how many more young people are out there hurting, and what am I doing with my journey to effect change? It can't just be about me and me living in a bubble. It has to be about me doing something to make a difference. So when I returned to Chicago, got a call from the professional football team in Toronto, of the Canadian Football League, the Toronto Argonauts. They invited me back to try out for the football team, and I had one question for them. The question was, if I make this team, will I have an opportunity to give back and make a difference? And the gentleman I was speaking to said, if you make this team, you will have the greatest opportunity of all the pro sports to in Toronto to do just that. So I signed, went back to Toronto, made the team, immediately got involved in giving back. I was doing training, doing racial sensitivity training with police officers. I was doing motivational things in schools, running leadership programs, and was just really passionate about the work that I was doing. And I was doing that for a number of years while I was doing other fun things like acting, and I co-hosted a fitness show and did some things along those lines. Going into my fifth season, I'd signed a contract extension with one of the clubs and was going out to celebrate with a couple of my buddies. So we decided to carpool and meet up at a location, and then we'd drive downtown, have dinner, and go out. So I got to the location first. And as I was waiting for my friends, I saw two guys walking towards me. Guys, jeans and like a plaid shirt, sweatshirts type. One of the guys says, "Hey, man, what you got? Got any drugs?" And I remember looking at them thinking, come on, man. If only you knew my journey, my path, and how much, you know, I try to steer people on the right path and away from things that are harmful. And then I thought, well, how would they know, right? They don't know me. They don't know what I stand for. So I looked at them and I said, nope. And I went back to my phone call. Well, one of the guys stopped at the rear of my vehicle. So I was parked in a parking lot with other vehicles adjacent to and in front of mine as well. So one guy stops at the rear of my vehicle. The other guy kept walking. The guy that stopped says, "Are you sure? You sure you don't have anything?" And I looked at him and I was about to answer, but then I didn't see where the other gentleman was. So I looked over my other shoulder and he was standing in my blind spot. So I took a step back so I could see both of them at the same time. And I said, "What's going on?" Well, to make a long story short, they were both armed with guns. And they grabbed me and threw me down to the ground and started to beat me. And, you know, beat me until the skin on my head split. And I was laying face down, thinking, knowing that my life was about to end. And I just thought, not like this, man. I've got so much in me to give. Like, I would never have dreamt in a million years that my life would end like that. And, you know, in that moment where I felt like, you know, it was about to end, some things crystallized in my mind, things in terms of what's important and family and using your gifts and talents to serve. Because I felt like not only was my last breath about to be taken, but all the things that I had said to myself, you know, one day I will, you know, one day I'm going to give that speech. One day I'm going to thank that person. One day I'm going to make a difference this way. All of those things were about to die with me that night. And I felt like I was not only losing out on that opportunity, but I felt like I was doing a whole host of others a disservice for not having shared what I had to share. To make a long story short, the gentleman that I was assaulted by ended up being two corrupt undercover police officers who happened to work for the police force that I was doing a lot of work with. I was doing some racial sensitivity training with some of their officers. I was going into schools with some of their, you know, the constables that work within the school building, running activities and events and programs for young people. I was doing a lot of community work with the chief of police. And so when they realized that I was that guy, you know, I thought for sure they'll say, you know, hey, we made a mistake. But that's not what happened. Instead, I was taken to jail. I wasn't allowed to speak to anyone. You know, folks generally hear that you go to jail, you get a phone call. There was no phone call for me. As I was in the jail cell and you know, imagine having a big gash in the middle of my forehead and at the side of my head and there's blood running down my face. And, you know, two officers come to the cell and they're standing outside the cell and they look in and they said, you don't look well. I said, I don't feel well. And they said, you know what, your blood got on a couple of our guys. Do you have any diseases that we need to test them for? And I remember just looking at them in such disbelief, man, thinking, come on, man, is that what you're going to ask? So I looked at them and I said, no, I don't. And they then walked off. Hours passed and I heard them releasing people. So I thought, okay, they're not giving me my phone call. I kept asking for one. So I figured they were just going to release me like they're releasing others. So I, as a gentleman was walking past, I said, excuse me, when do I get to go home? And he looks at me and he says, home? You're not going home. You have a bail hearing. So I said to him, a bail hearing for what? And he gives me this grin and says, don't you know what you've been charged with? You've been charged with assaulting a police officer, 2 counts, and possession of a controlled substance. And my jaw just dropped. And I'm thinking, that's crazy. That he must have me mixed up with someone. And as I'm looking at him, I said, what? He looked back at me and he said, man, do you know what you look like? You look like a piece of S-H-I-T. That's what you look like. And he walked off. I realized that it wasn't a dream or a nightmare when they opened my cell up and handcuffed me to three other guys to take me to court. So the charges that he had mentioned were for real. And, you know, the injuries I sustained ended my football career. The bigger challenge was the charges, because the charges compromised everything that I had gone back to Canada to do in terms of wanting to serve and give back and make a difference. So with those charges, a number of the groups that I was working with, places that I used to be celebrated when I'd walk into with, you know, big business folks and high-ranking politicians, I still went to some of those places, David, because the things that were being discussed at those meetings were still of importance, community and coming together and making a difference and, you know, using our gifts to serve and youth. So I still went. The only difference was when I would walk into the room this time, instead of folks saying, "Hey, that's Orlando, he's my friend, treat him like family." This time when I stepped into the room, some people got up and said, "If he's going to be in here, I'm out." And I didn't really know him. You know, I heard a lot of people say a lot of different things. So anyway, it was a very trying time and a painful journey. Fast forward a little bit, and we were just hoping that the truth will come out one day, and having to go to court and not being able to play ball and provide for my family that way, not being able to go out and speak and connect in community, was a real challenge for me. Fast forward a little bit, going through the whole court case and having to sit there and listen to the officer say, "You know, Your Honor, he's 6'2", 235 pounds, and he's trained to hurt people. I've never been in such fear for my life in my entire career." And I thought, how could you say that? Man, just speak the truth. And, you know, anyhow, we were praying for the truth to come out. And 6 weeks before we were supposed to get the verdict, I got a call from the Toronto Star. And the news reporter on the other line said, "Hey, you may find this interesting, but you know the arresting officer in your case? He was actually just arrested by the RCMP, or our equivalent of the FBI, he was arrested by them for trafficking cocaine. They found 17 kilos of cocaine at his house. So they may be calling you soon." And sure enough, shortly after we hung up, I got a call from a Crown attorney, and the Crown said, "Hey, listen, we know you're friends with the chief and the mayor. We don't think it would be fair for you to get dragged through the mud. You know, this court stuff could get really messy. Why don't you just let us drop the charges and everyone could go home and be happy?" And I said, "Absolutely not." And her response was, "Fine, this was your chance. You're going down, buddy." And she hung up the phone. We were then called into court for them to ask the judge to let them drop the charge. The judge said no. And he said, "No, I won't let you drop it. Further to that, I've actually prepared my ruling for today. I find Mr. Bowen innocent. These are the reasons why." And so I was acquitted. And we then filed a civil lawsuit that settled out of court years later. So all in all, that whole process took about 5.5 years. So,
wow. So Orlando, one question that runs through my mind as you're describing all of these horrendous events is, particularly for someone who has tried so hard to set an example for others and to inspire others and to affect change, when such a horrible course of events occurs that impacts you personally, how do you have the personal fortitude and the wherewithal to continue to pursue the path that supports your personal values?
You know, I think it, for me, it always starts with why. Like, why are you doing what you're doing in the first place? I think if I had the mindset was never that it was about me. And, you know, so early in the process, the morning after the assault, when I was at the hospital, and I was upset that this type of thing could happen, but I also in my heart was hoping that this was like a 1 in 10 million type of occurrence. When we got to the hospital and the nurse says to me, "What happened to you?" And I looked at my wife and I thought, there's no way she's going to believe this. So I said, I got jumped. And the nurse says, "By who, the police?" So and I thought, well, why would you say that? Why is that the first thing out of your mouth? And she said, "Because I've seen it more often than I'd like to. But usually, she says, usually it happens to teenagers, newcomers, or people who don't speak the language well. You don't really fit the bill. And in that moment, David, I realized that this whole thing wasn't even about me. It was really about, you know, being able to give hope to folks that found themselves in situations where others may call it hopeless. And it was, you know, it was this renewed spirit of, you know, this journey that we're on, this battle, this trial, you know, it's not for our benefit, but by getting through it, we will be giving others permission to fight through what they're going through, right? And to stay committed to their ideals, to their values, and to what they know is right. So it was something that really strengthened my, you know, strengthened my desire to serve, because I thought if this could happen, you know, we have issues. We've got work to do.
Orlando, I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about some of the people who had an impact on you when you were really put upon, and where most people, frankly, might have given up. Because you've mentioned a couple of instances where people were helpful to you as you were going through this really stressful situation.
Yeah. So there were a number of folks that it was really interesting, David, because, you know, when I walked into some of those community meetings and, you know, folks would get up and say, if he's going to be here, I'm out, or I don't want to be any part of this committee anymore. And others got up and said, I didn't really know him. So they did what they could to distance themselves. Some people thought that would be very hurtful. And, you know, maybe it was to a small degree, but to me it was more enlightening around who's really in our corner. And who was really in our corner in the first place, and who really knew who we were and knew what we stood for as a family. So for me, I felt like that crystallized the folks who understood what we're about as a family and what I'm about as a person. In saying that, there are also some folks who were there, you know, well above and beyond. One gentleman, his name is Chuck Ely. You know, Chuck's a guy that he came up through the civil rights era, grew up in Portsmouth, Ohio, you know, and saw a lot, went through a lot as he was a young man, and painfully and unfortunately, my experience he shared reminded him of some of the things that he experienced, either personally or peripherally as he was coming up. And but he was someone who modeled support, you know, modeled strength and resilience and hope. You know, it's just like, man, just hang in there, you know, and know that you've got people here that are supporting you. You know, so it was a really trying time, but we had folks like Chuck, we had folks like a gentleman, Michael Pinball Clement, former NFL guy, drafted by, I think, Kansas City, but spent a lot of his time up in the Toronto area and actually holds records in the Canadian Football League for, you know, all-purpose yards. But his, and he's only like 5'5". And his thing is, you know, there's something that's going to be good to come out of this. And I felt that way, but it was reassuring hearing him say that, because he said the level of irony in this story is just, it's unbelievable. You went from being the spokesperson, the poster boy, the face of the police in the community, for which I took a lot of heat for in the black community, because they're saying, you know, a lot of my peers would say, man, why are you doing that, man? Why are you trying to help them? You know that they're only using you, or, you know, they don't really care about you. They're always harassing us. So there were all these things. And I said, you know what? The only way for things to change and get better is if I look at my role and say, and what can I do? I've got to continually ask myself that question. If there's something that I see a challenge in, what can I do?
Orlando, you and I both support people in the business world around issues of leadership and helping them through their struggles.
Yes.
In business, generally, we're not dealing with life and death issues. We're dealing with being more successful or being less successful.
Yes.
And it occurs to me, based on what you're describing, how important it is to surround yourself with the right people, people who have similar values to yourself, people who, as you said, model strength and hope, especially when times are tough.
Yes.
And if you were able to surround yourself with people who can keep you going when you were facing severe physical challenges and facing not just business challenges, but challenges that affected everything about your own moral character.
Mm-hmm.
How much more so can we benefit from hearing about your experience and who you look to find inspiration and support for those people in the business world who are trying to overcome challenges?
Yeah, so, you know, I always say to, you know, it starts with you understanding who you are and what you stand for. Because then you can, once you're able to kind of, once you're able to articulate to yourself, what am I about? And answer that question. What am I about? What do I stand for? What are my values? Then you're able to look at folks who share those values, not in word, but in deed, right? And, you know, begin to surround yourself with folks who share those interests and values that you find foundational and of significance. When you have these moments of, you know, I call these moments of truth, right? These split second, these moments where you're faced with a decision that can impact the trajectory of your business, your life, your future in terms of relationships, so much. What are you guided by? Right, and it's those things that are near and dear to you. The value system that you're hanging your hat on are the things that will, you know, that will help you make those decisions in those moments. Because you know, oftentimes you don't have time to stop and do a SWOT analysis or any other types of analyses. You have to act, and so you're going to act in a way that you know, is authentic and what may come natural to you and what comes natural, understanding if you're of the belief that thoughts are the things that you feed your mind with, right? And which are influenced by the people you surround yourself with and the things that you watch and the things that you listen to and how you spend your energy. So all of those things, when you're looking at building teams and you know, working towards a common goal and working towards a bottom line, those things are of great importance.
Also, we spend a lot of time planning and looking at various scenarios, but you're so right that frequently we're faced with these moments of truth, and how you act in those moments of truth makes a huge difference in the outcome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, David, it's not easy, because you could sit down and you could draft up a number of scenarios, right? And, you know, I think about, well, what are the things that would be what I would call the game breakers, the things that if they were to happen, I would set my goals aside in order to handle that. So maybe it's a severe illness of my spouse or one of our three boys or you know, other things, right? And so you could plan for certain things, you could plan for the things that are going to take your energy, where you volunteer or work things, but there are going to be some other things that we're faced with, and you know, all the entrepreneurs out there and business leaders out there definitely would share the understanding that there's some things that will happen that you can't plan for, right? But it's you know, really looking at what is going to be some of the critical factors in your decision-making process when you're blindsided by those challenges.
Right.
Right? And by those moments.
And it's based on your values.
Yes.
It's so true. Orlando, what have been some of your big successes?
So I've been able to, through me going out and doing motivational speaking corporately, and as well as through the charity, we've been able to engage over 30,000 people per year through keynotes and workshops and training. So I'm excited about that. I still feel though that there's so much more that can and needs to be done. But I'm grateful for the journey that we've had thus far, and all that we're continuing to do. I've been really blessed to have a phenomenal team around me in all of the various endeavors, whether it's folks that are from, you know, connected with the National Speakers Association or the sister organization here in Canada, the Canadian Association of Professional Speakers. It's folks that are really passionate about using their gifts, their stories, and their talent to make a difference. So just being in those circles, I consider that to be a success. I will have to say, though, that I've had an opportunity through our charity. We were running some programming at a school, where some of the young people felt dejected and felt like they didn't belong. And we had the privilege of being able to run a program there where one day I was standing outside the program with the principal watching kids walk into the space, and you could see their body language change as they entered into the space that we were delivering programming in. So, the principal looks at me and he says, "Do you see that?" And I said, "I see something, but what do you see?" And, he said, "The way that their body language is changing as they're entering into the space, that is phenomenal. I wish we could have that in every room in the building." So when I say something that I celebrate is his vice principal, who is at the time was the vice principal, is now a principal at her own school, and has said that she has adopted some of the principles that we engage, that we use to engage young people, and that is standard in our school building. So it doesn't matter who it is stepping into the building, they are creating that safe, welcoming environment where people are being engaged. So I thought that was something to celebrate as well.
Orlando, what are you working on now that you're really excited about?
I'm really excited about this Game Changer Tour. So, Game Changers are individuals that show up in the lives of others in powerful ways that change the path, or possibilities, or perspectives of those individuals, right? So I'm excited to have the, privilege to be able to connect with folks and go in and work collaboratively with them to empower their teams and to empower their, whether it's their management teams, their sales teams, their managing staff. I'm really, really excited about that and how things are coming about towards that end.
That's great. And if listeners want to learn more about Game Changers or about you, where can they go?
www.orlandobowen.com, they could find out more information about some of the things that I do, as well as some opportunities to collaborate and so we could have conversations about how I could add value to things that are already happening and how we could help them take their game to the next level. I just I serve as a support towards that end.
That's great. And additionally, you mentioned Chuck Ely as someone who has been influential to you. I wondered if you could maybe mention one other influencer that's been pivotal in your career.
Yeah, so we've had a number of folks kind of in my circle that have poured into me over the years. Someone who I haven't had the privilege of meeting in person, but have read a number of his books, John Maxwell, and his some of his sentiments around leadership, personal leadership, organizational leadership, teasing out leadership in others have been things that have been very, very meaningful to me, and very much in, you know, we talked earlier about aligning yourself with folks who share values. And I felt that way, and you know, having the opportunity to hear him speak, but also, you know, from his, some of his work, you know, his, it really resonated with me and has impacted the way that, that I do things and the way that we do things here at One Voice, One Team, and with my speaking business as well.
That's great. Orlando, who do you know personally who's currently doing remarkable work?
Oh, there are so many individuals, David. I mentioned Michael Pinball Clemens earlier. He's a dynamic speaker that does some tremendous work. A lot of his work in Canada and some in the U.S. There's also a young lady that I want to highlight. Her name is Orly Wabha. She's out of New York City and started an organization called Life Vest. And it's all about spreading kindness. So it's interesting because she, you know, she does a, she's got some powerful videos out there towards that end, really talking about or that embody the spirit of everyone having an opportunity to do something that can make a difference. You know, I always say that every day is game day. If you wake up, your heart's beating, you then have an opportunity to make a difference in someone else's life. I take it a step further and say I have an obligation to make a difference somehow, some way in someone else's life through my vocation or just someone I have a random interaction with on the street. So, you know, and that really is in alignment with what Michael Pinball Clemens is about and what Orly Wabha is about as well.
I think we should all feel an obligation to make a difference.
I agree.
Orlando, could you just mention again to listeners how they can learn more about you?
If they could go to www.orlandobowen.com, O-R-L-A-N-D-O-B-O-W-E-N. I will tell you a quick joke that I stepped into to a building one time to deliver a keynote, and one of the office administrator thought my last name was Bloom, so she sends a message out saying Orlando Bloom is at the front desk. So all of a sudden, all of, you know, these young females all of a sudden had a whole bunch of photocopying to do. They're like walking towards the office, like looking around to see the actor Orlando Bloom, only to be disappointed to see that it was me. so it was, you know, fun and interesting. But folks could definitely find me there. That's where I hang out. And I invite folks to come hang out with me, share anything that's of value. I'm always interested in hearing what people walk away with in terms of, you know, we're having this conversation right now. I'd like to know how it's helping them. They could also find me on Twitter. My handle is at Orlando Bowen. And just send me messages, reach out. I do my absolute best to follow up in a timely manner so that we can keep the dialogue flowing.
Yeah, the dialogue is very important. And I also encourage listeners to post comments and questions on our blog, and we can both respond to them.
Absolutely.
Orlando, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. You have such an inspiring story, and you're doing such great work. It's really a pleasure to have you. My guest today has been former professional athlete, speaker, and television personality Orlando Bowen. Thank you again, Orlando, for joining us.
Thank you so much, David. I really appreciate you, your work, and just wish you continued success as you change lives through this platform.
Thank you. You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.